This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of March 8th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Saturday night is my buddy, Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm hanging in there. It's not freezing anymore.
Yeah.
But it's not warm yet, but getting there. That's what I can say about
it. It is getting there. It's getting from really painfully cold season to allergy season.
Yeah, just before we started recording, I sneeze, and that's part of it. I've been inside all day. A lot of you guys know I had to go to the States for a family situation. I came back, and last year, right on March 1st, I started sneezing with hay fever. And this year, I've been okay, except for today. And today, I've been inside all day, basically, and I've been sneezing. I can't imagine going outside.
Yeah, it snuck in through the door. Through the mail slot and ambushed you. Yeah, that's sneaky. That cedar pollen is really sneaky stuff.
And so is the COVID. Actually, COVID isn't that sneaky, but I think we're making it out to be sneaky because we're just not as a society adhering to what we're supposed to do. But hey,
I have some pejoratives at the ready, but enough.
I'm sure you do. But hey, this thing is like a fire. It's not out until all the flames are out and the hot spots are doused. So we got to keep up the fight. So thank you to all the frontline workers, and thank you to the people administering vaccines, and everybody wear your masks. Okay. And one more thing, again, please go to iTunes and rate and review us.
Yes, please.
So we can have more street cred among podcasts. We need our street cred.
Yeah. People see me on the street and they go, oh, come on. You're that podcast guy.
You only got two reviews. What are you talking about? All right. On this week's show, we've got a chat with former Swallows closer Tony Barnett, who's a scout with the Swallows now. And we're going to look at a couple recent trades, discuss preseason performances and opening day starters, and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right. So on Friday, I checked in again with Tony Barnett. He was on the show in December as a one of our listeners and Twitter followers reminded me. And he's, like I said, the former closer for the Swallows, and he's an advisor with the team. And we spoke by phone. He's in Arizona. Now, the Swallows overall had a really good roster strengthening offseason. I really liked some of the guys they brought in. Not exclusively the trio of foreign players, Cy Snead, Jose Osuna, Domingo Santana. Those guys, I think the two position players, Cy Snead's a pitcher, but the two position players have a lot of major league experience, I would say. And then recently, Rick Vandenhurk via free agency. And then they made a trade for Kazuto Taguchi from the Giants. So we'll talk about that as well. But I really like what they've done in the offseason, and that's huge for a team that, again, I thought issues weren't really so much with Masanori Ishikawa starting on opening day only. There were other issues in the team, especially when, and we'll get to this too, but when they had to go to backup players. And I think when you add some depth and you get some players who can perform or you have to wait their turn to perform and create that competitive situation, a lot like what SoftBank does, you'll have a better chance of surviving when the injuries come and when players who are struggling or just need a break, when that situation arises, you'll be able to compete a bit better. So again, Tony gives us some thoughtful and insightful responses to some questions. And I think he talks about a bright immediate future for the Swallows. So let's take a listen. All right, Yakult advisor in pro scouting, Tony Barnett is our guest this week. We really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're busy, so thank you very much.
Hello, John. Welcome back to spring training.
Well, it almost feels like spring outside. I didn't have to dress like Kenny from South Park for my run this morning, so that was good.
Oh, man, definitely a spring here in Arizona.
Oh, good, good, good. All right, let's jump into it. I really love what the Yakult Swallows did in the offseason, starting right after this last pitch was thrown. So you look at this offseason for the Swallows. What's your assessment?
No, I mean, I agree with your assessment. I like what we've done on the foreign level going in, especially recently with the addition of Vanden Herk. Just a veteran winner in Japan who, he played for SoftBank for the entirety of his career in Japan until now, right?
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, he knows how to win on the mound, and I think he's going to add a great presence in that clubhouse, especially for the new foreigners coming in.
Yeah, what is your standout move from the offseason? I mean, you got some guys in free agency, just made a trade with the Yomiuri Giants to get Kazuto Taguchi, a left-handed pitcher. So what move stands out other than Vanden Herk?
I like left-handed pitching. I'm always a big fan of extra left-handed pitching, so that's anything to add to that depth. I appreciate moves like that if I were in charge of a team. Honestly, I really do just appreciate, I like the addition of the sixth foreigner. The rules for the roster are the same as last year, am I correct?
As far as I know.
Okay, as far as you know. So, yeah, so the sixth is definitely necessary where you want that depth, you want extra depth on the foreign level because at some point along the way, especially with younger foreigners and new guys, the grind of a Japanese season will catch up. I think at times, and some guys will need a break, and you know, who knows, injuries and stuff like that come down the pike, and you're going to need depth. But the addition of the sixth foreigner, I think, is pretty big.
All right. So you mentioned that Rick Vanden Herk was a pickup here in the offseason. What goes into bringing a player on when you have, for instance, you're over there scouting and you're looking at foreign players, and the topic of Vanden Herk comes up. You got a 30-plus-year-old pitcher like Rick, and then you've got a newbie or who would be a newbie coming over to Yalco. What's the process that you go into in making that selection between those two kinds of pitchers?
Well, I think it depends a lot. You know, I can't really speak a lot on what happens with the end product of who gets signed.
Sure.
You know, I can only do my assessments and pass along the information that Aaron and I have, and you know, and our hands are off. But you have to look at your team as a whole at that situation. With the addition of Vanden Herk, he would have been the sixth foreigner. We have a group of young guys coming in, have a couple foreigners with McGuff and Suarez, and you start to mix in a guy who is salted and veteran like Vanden Herk to add to that, add to what Scott knows already, add to what Suarez knows already, and then help those younger guys kind of see an example and see how things have been doing. I mean, Vanden Herk's got how many rings now?
Don't remind us.
You know, so right. You know, I mean, so he knows what it's like to be there for spring training from day one all the way until the very end. He knows what it's like to do that multiple times. So I think there's a lot of knowledge to be had there, and I just, I can't really speak highly enough about, you know, picking up Rick.
Okay. Now, this is a question from Jim. He said, 14 years ago, the Swallows announced a long-term plan to develop pitching and acted on it. Now, what kind of clear-cut or clear long-term plan is in place now?
Yeah, you know, you and I, we talked a little bit about this, coming into the interview, and, you know, it's from 2007 to 2021 is where we're at now. That's, you know, a lot of time has passed. A lot of regimes have come through and changed. Ogawa's been manager twice in that span.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it's a lot of, I don't know any of the details on that.
Right.
And I don't know if there are any long-term details in place now that wouldn't be part of my, that's not my my wheelhouse for work right now.
Right.
But what I can, you know, tell you about the Swallows is, you know, they've got a good solid bullpen piece in Scott right now. I really like him in the bullpen. He's got great stuff, and I think he can do good things. You're starting to build a rotation around guys like Suarez. You got Ogawa to come back, you know, and you start to add pieces around them. You add Rick into the mix. And I just think that you piece together what you have with what you have. And if you can get a long-term plan in place, that'd be great. But in the state of the game it is, I mean, I can't imagine you have a full long-term plan unless it goes all the way down to the development level, which, again, I wouldn't have anything to do with the development level.
Right, yeah, that sounds like a good question for the owner.
Right, you know, it really does. You know, when it comes to development, that's where your long-term plans come into place, is starting at when we acquire a player out of high school, when you acquire a player, you know, out of college. You know, the development times are going to be different between those two guys, but the end result needs to be the same. If you come out of college, your development needs to be a little bit quicker. If you're out of high school, depending on the level of the player, you know, I can get long-winded with it, but the development is the long-term plan, and that comes especially with each player, of what each player's developmental plan is. You know, do they have a quick plan like Yamada did, where he's so talented and above the rest that we're going to get him up there against the top products as quick as possible, you know, or is it going to be a situation where we have this young guy and he's really raw talented and needs a lot of work on the farm before we start getting him into higher competition? We need to build his confidence around some of the skills he has. You know, so it just depends on player to player. And when you talk long-term pitching plans, it starts at the development level.
Okay, yeah, that's a great answer to a very difficult question. Okay, obviously pitching, I think, was a priority this offseason. And recently the team traded a young infielder for a pitcher. But neither one of these guys has really been standout. However, the infielder you guys sent away was only 23, turns 24 soon. So I know you don't have all of an assessment of the pitching staff, but you guys have made some moves this offseason. How do you feel about the pitching staff as you head toward the season?
Well, I mean, I like the pitching staff. I really do. Whenever anything's led by Masanori Ishikawa, I think you're starting off on the right foot. Whether that guy, you know, he's getting a little bit older as well, but regardless, when he's your leader per se, when he's the guy that's just been around since the dawn of time to begin with, now it seems, I like the start of a season when he's in charge of things.
Yeah, Ishikawa to me is like the tortoise. You know, in the tortoise, you know, and the hare race.
You know, it's just, you know, he's just the guy that guys are going to go to with anything that you possibly need. He's one of those players that's going to have every bit of information, and, you know, he's just a leader by example. He just shows up and does the job every day. So anytime pitching staffs have him surrounding or him in the group, I like the start of the day. You know, but you've got Ishiyama back, you got Ogawa back, Stein Sykes Need. I like the pitching staff. I think there's a lot of power in that bullpen right now. So, again, you know, I think Swallows fans can look forward to a lot of guys that can come out with a lot of, you know, a lot of good fastballs. And that's always exciting to see as a fan. Now, if we can, you know, I'm sitting here saying like I'm on the team. But, you know,
guys
can start to, you know, well, you know what I mean. But, like, you know, I'm not going out there and toeing the rubber anymore.
Right.
If those guys go out there and, you know, they feature this power stuff that they have and the results start backing up behind it, I think you'll see a charge of electricity go through the fan base of the Colt.
Now, what's your expectations for this crew of import players?
Every single one of them be an all-star. again, show up. Ready to get after it, and ready to work, and just ready to, as hard as it can be to do something with both feet, you know, just jump in with both feet, and, you know, just become a part of the team as fast as you can, and, you know, just do your best, man. Try hard. Try your best, and just go out there, and I think the results can come back, you know, can start to add up. You know, they brought back Ito as a bullpen coach, or as not a bullpen coach, but as a pitching coach. And, you know, I'll always have a bias because he was so, you know, instrumental in my development as a pitcher when I was in Japan and, you know, developing pitches and helping me along the way that I think he's a great baseball mind, and I think he's good with working with younger players, and I think he's good at, as a Japanese coach, I think he's very good at communicating with foreign pitchers and helping them to be more comfortable in the setting. So I'm really encouraged with what I see on paper, and I'd like to be able to see it in person.
Well, I really like that answer, because a lot of times when you give, you ask a question like what your expectations, and people start shooting out numbers. Well, that's, those are just random, because a lot of the guys haven't played here yet. McGough has, Snead hasn't. Vandenhoek has been in the Pacific League, and he has, had some injuries, so hopefully he can get healthy and be healthy for you. But I love the answer, because in any sport, I mean, you just have to go prep as best you can and then live with the results when you go out there and do it. So I really like the answer. I don't know if the rest of the people will, but I like it because it's realistic.
Preparation's in the preparation, especially in spring training, if these guys can, learn to mesh with the team that's surrounding them and just get comfortable in their own shoes in Japan, which can be a challenge within itself.
Yep.
So if they can do that, that'd be my expectation for spring training. Stay healthy and get comfortable. Because if a comfortable player is going to be a lot more effective as opposed to a tightened up, nervous guy. So if they can get comfortable, those are my expectations. Get comfortable and become a team member. That way, the season rolls along, and confidence can start to build, and everybody can start to get on a good rapport with each other, and just let the wins pile up. Because that's all my experience of being on teams that win. That kind of seems like how it works. Just get a bunch of guys that are comfortable around each other, and they just play well together. So I know there's a lot more that goes into it, but my expectation, I guess, to answer your question, would be for these guys to get comfortable, stay healthy in spring, and go into the season confident that the team is surrounding them and wants them to be successful.
Okay. All right, last question, and we'll let you take care of whatever it is you have to take care of before you go to sleep. There's a lot of discussion about service time and manipulation by MLB clubs. Now, the Yakko Swallows have a potential Hall of Famer, I think, in Murakami, and he started really young, so his clock is ticking. So what's your impression of NPB teams' attitude towards service time? Because obviously you want to keep Murakami around as long as you can, but the reality is he's going to be available to major league teams at in his late 20s, and that's a problem if he keeps hitting, because I think they're going to really want him.
I know it's a problem here. There's no question about it. I think basically the former CEO of Seattle Mariners came out and said the quiet part pretty loud recently.
Yep.
That's not just, when it's said in so nonchalantly in a conversation like that, it's tradecraft. It's not just him. And so it's a problem here with manipulation here in the States. As far as Japan, I'm really uneducated in the matter. It's just one of those things that you don't really see. I really never took notice of if it is happening, because I saw guys like Yamada get called up. I always go back to that one. If the talent's there, they kind of seem to say, all right, well, if the talent's there, if you think you're ready and we think you're ready, you're going to the top team. And if you play well, we're not sending you down. if you end up getting RBIs and home runs, you're not going to go back down. Maybe you guys would be a little bit more knowledgeable on that, because you see it every single day. You guys have been watching NPB baseball for decades now. But from my perspective, I haven't really seen anything in regards to service time manipulation. I've seen it when it comes to posting, how guys, teams will and won't post early, depending on how they feel towards a player. But again, I think that comes to each individual case. I don't know if that's kind of a rampant manipulation as it is here in the United States.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm just looking for your impression, and that's your impression, and that's great, because I don't really get the impression that Japan is worried about anything but W's. Let's stack them up.
Right. And that's been my interpretation, is that if a guy can, if he can cut it, you know, get him up there and get him in there. And if he doesn't, okay. If he struggles, okay, back to the farm, especially if you're a young guy. It's going to be easier to get sent back down because, okay, you're young, you know, you're going to struggle. It's expected, you know, go back down. We saw some things you need to work on. Head back down there and work on it. Okay, you come back up and ball out, great. You know, but it's very rare that you see a guy come up and just ball out from pitch one. And when you have that happen, you know, you can't turn him back down. All right, we saw you hit 350 with 20 home runs, but we think you need some extra work in the minors.
Yep. You know? Yeah. Which is,
you know, which is what they did with Chris Bryant a few years back.
Chris Bryant, remember, yeah, two weeks he needed to go back down to the farm. And I'm like, what's he going to improve defensively in 2 weeks? And yeah,
that was one of the very first kind of times where it kind of came to light that everyone was like, okay, like it's blatantly obvious what's happening here. You know, before they, you know, owners and this, you know, GMs had kind of played loose with the rules and, you know, you could kind of hide it, but Chris was the first one to kind of be like, okay, like that's ridiculous. You just hit 500 in spring training.
I understand. Right. I understand. So, all right, buddy. Well, thank you very much. We will look for you in another 3 or 4 months here and talk again, hopefully.
Yeah, man. Would love to be able to let the world right itself and get out there to Tokyo to see everybody.
Well, in due time, hopefully, in due time.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, take care of yourself. Thank you very much for the time. Appreciate it.
You as well. Take care, fellas.
All right, Tony. Thank you again. He was busy pretty much every day this past week, and he said, I don't know, I don't think I'm going to have time, but he set aside some time for us, and I really appreciate it.
So, yeah, I know. It's like I feel quite honored that he would go out of his way to do that for us, and he does it a lot. I mean, it's just the person he is. I don't know what kind of person that is, but I'm sure glad he's one of them.
Definitely.
So, and I also like that, you know, although he was doing the interview with you and I wasn't in the picture, I felt like I was there in the conversation as a silent partner. It was, that's a skill. he's
it's a skill for him to be able to talk at you, but not to you.
Well,
I don't know what you mean.
I'm listening to it and I felt like he knew I was there listening to it, you know, like I was part of the conversation, and it was quite, for me, it was really attractive. I'm having language issues today, which happens. I'll be turning 61 in a couple of weeks, so maybe that's it.
Yeah. Well, I tell you this, it was, I would hope he's talking like that to everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, the Swallows fans, the non-Swallows fans as well, when he's talking, that we're just basically talking about baseball. And a lot of things that apply to the Swallows apply to a lot of teams, whether it's, you know, in Japan, Korea, the States, or South America, wherever it is. I think a lot of things are international. So hopefully he's talking to everybody. But I'm glad you felt a personal touch there.
Well, I did. I felt there was a connection there that he achieved. It was an interesting chat. A couple of things. I think first, I liked his shout out to Tomohito Ito, which was not a surprise because pretty much he tells everybody what a big deal pitching coach Tomohito Ito was for him. And mm-hmm. he's a favorite of mine. The guy who he's replacing, Takashi Saito, is also a favorite of mine, but he'd never coached before. And he did it because, well, I've never coached before and the manager asked me, so, well, why the heck not? But I did notice, and we haven't spoken since this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
I did notice that about halfway through the season that the other pitching coach was the guy who was going out to the mound. And I think as Takashi Saito ended up as the number two pitching coach. He started out as number one and he ended up as number two.
Gotcha.
I think it was just his inexperience there. But Ito is experienced in this. He's been around. He knows what it's all about. And he helped Tony develop his pitches. But in addition to that, I guess the other comment I really liked of his was the expression, learn to mesh with the team around them and to be comfortable in their own shoes. That's really good. I mean, that's a really, like Aaron Guile, who works with him as a scout for the Swallows, they have a really good way with, they both have a really good way with words. And when I heard him say that, I thought, wow, that's such a good way of putting it, because it's very easy to, be apart from your teammates in Japan. And I know the Swallows are good, at that, at including players.
Right.
But still, it's important for the player to be, to be a part of it and feel, accept the baseball on more than just a sort of contractual level. So I did like that. And then in answer to my question, yeah, I mean, I was talking about, the reason I asked the question is because 2007, the Swallows came out with a plan, and it was sort of like they published it. They said, this is our plan. We're going to develop our young pitching. We're going to bring in, make sure we have a good defense, and we'll get our young pitchers all up to speed. And they hired Shigeru Takada, who was the former general manager of the Nippon Ham Fighters. And before that, he'd been the manager. I think he had two stints as manager with the Fighters, in which he did a really good job with the pitching staff. And it was kind of a two-edged sword, Takada's plan was, because he basically wouldn't take anybody who was over, he wouldn't use anybody who was over like 30. And he wouldn't use anybody on the team who wasn't good at catching the ball. So Kazuhiro Hatakayama basically got stuck on the farm team because he wasn't a real good fielding first baseman.
Right.
And they had a lot of players who could have helped them, but they weren't, because they weren't part of his mission. And right. So, but the pitching did get better. And then when everybody was healthy and Tetsuta Yamada came along and Vladimir Ballantyne took off, then they had a really, really, they had a really good team for about 5 years. So it was the reason I asked is because they had this plan and it worked. I mean, the biggest problem with the plan was that, I think not related to the plan, they suffered through a whole slew of injuries for about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I remember the injury years.
but again, they could see, and when it started to go south, he wouldn't use players who could hit because they weren't fielding, and the team kind of went into a funk, and they changed gears to a manager who's going to let everybody play, and it worked out really good. It worked out really well for them. And now when I look at the Swallows, all I see is the plan. The only plan I can see is patch every hole you can find and bail water as fast as you can. And if Tony doesn't know there's a plan, I'm not saying there isn't a plan, but it's unlikely there's this sort of clear overriding, because when there's a big vision, when a team has a big vision, people tend to know about it. So if they do have a big plan and they do have a big vision, they're not telling anybody about it.
Well, or they just issue, I don't know, not an edict, but they issue orders to the scouts. We want to find these kinds of players, and they don't need to know the rest.
Well,
I mean,
yeah, but they also
I understand the idea and the notion about it.
They know they're talking to people and they know what's going on. I mean, when I was shocked when I was at the winter meetings and I mentioned something about Oryx's front office being in a civil war and the foreign scouts were all nodding their heads. I'm going, how do you guys know? And they said, people tell us stuff. So
sure.
I would think if it was, if there was a big plan to this, I'm not saying they don't have any plans, but I'm saying it's probably a lot of little plans. You know, this is a weak area. You know, every team has that. You know, we were bad at this. We need to get better. We 3 years down the road, we need to get better at that. But an overarching sort of like, they're very rare in Japan, at least. I think they're pretty rare. I remember when the Cebu Lions hired Hatsuhiko Tsuji, they said basically we want the team to be able to catch the ball. But that's okay. That was a 1 year thing.
Okay. All right. Well, what I was going to say was, yes, certainly they probably said, okay, these are the kinds of players that we want to bring in. These are the kinds of pitchers. These are the kinds of position players. And I think that's part of the entire scheme. And I don't, maybe there was no complete book per se on the type of pitcher that they wanted, but just to fit in some categories. But that's a question we can ask, and that's a more direct question, because I think the way that you the question's phrased, like, you know, 14 years ago, this happened, that happened, I'm in line with Tony's response in saying, look, during that time, they've had X number of general managers, X number of field managers. I don't know that there's a complete mission statement that's going on that all these guys have carried.
No, and I didn't. That's why I didn't mean it that way. I just meant that at this one point in time, the Swallows had this directive. I don't think they've had that for maybe 7 or 8 years now, maybe 10 years.
Yeah. So I don't think he would know that either.
No, but I forget what happened in 2007. I'm saying is their mission now? I don't think there's any relation between the two. I just wanted to say that there was a contrast. One time they had one.
All right. So for me, I liked when Tony, I think he threw a little backdoor slider for us, and he mentioned depth very subtly. And I thought that discussion was a key component for the Swallows, because as I touched on earlier, that's some of the things that happens, or that's one of the things that happens when the Swallows run into a couple injuries or get into a situation where they have to use not their frontline players, because it seems like they're competitive a lot early on in a season, and they come up with a little injury here or there, and they have to put in a backup for either a little while or an extended period, and they are, you know, drop off in production. The guy gets banged up and or slows down a little bit, and the replacements just aren't as productive, or they're not quite as polished. Let's put it that way. And so something I've always said is that improvement doesn't always manifest itself in the win-loss column. You can compete better in games. For instance, you have fewer blowout losses. You have more innings that you play with a lead, and you have some comebacks that just kind of fall short, but you're competing better. And you know, that a lot of times, I think a lot of the games last year, we just saw a lot of peaks and valleys for the Swallows. Sometimes they played really well, and then other times they just weren't very competitive. And so I think you get better talent out there, you get better backups and better depth on the team. You might not see, I'm expecting more wins, of course, and I'm sure Swallows fans are expecting more wins, but you know, it's hard to quantify how many you're going to get and how much you've improved, because maybe the rest of the league has improved as well. So, or maybe you just got closer to the rest of the league. You didn't pass the other teams in the league in terms of talent. So, you know, this team, what is it? 3 out of the past 4 seasons has finished in last place, and 5 times in the previous 10 seasons in last place. And, you know, I think we'll be able to recognize improvement in that respect. Hopefully they'll be able to get out of that situation. But in terms of what people might expect, you know, and I always say it's a fine line. Winning and losing is a fine line. Sometimes you can be on the verge of winning a bunch of games, but you end up, you know, 20-something games out of first place. And, you know, they just start to pile up when you don't do well. And then as for that last question that I asked, the issue of service time, which I think you wrote a blog post about. And I had forgotten the Yanagita incident, but it seems like the team has been cleared of that. So no problem.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Well, the union said like, they were, but I'm just wondering.
It seems like, yeah.
Yeah, I deal with unions, and sometimes you know weird stuff's going on, but you don't have the smoking gun, so you just kind of have to let it go.
Right. But Tony, you know, I asked him what his impressions were about that, and it's like for me, like I said a long time ago on the show, the young kids who don't look at the standings and the passive fans, or, you know, the non, you know, people who just grab a ticket and go to a game in September, they don't really care what the standings say. You know, they don't care where you are in terms of wins and losses. Mm. They're out there watching a game where they put it on TV. They want to see effort. They want to see hustle. And they want to see wins on the days when they're watching the games. And it just doesn't matter where you are in the standings to them, especially the young kids who don't even look at the standings. They just see their favorite team and they want wins. So, you know, I think of service time and all these other things that get in the way of wins and losses. And it bothers me that it's a problem in the States. But like Tony said, I don't see that much of it going on in Japan. And that's so good. But I do have concerns that, you know, if they don't turn this thing around, that Murakami is going to be a target for MLB teams. And he might, you know, I don't know. Obviously, they would have to post him. But he's so young and he started so young that he'll be at prime age when he's ready to go as an international free agent.
Because he's a Hayomare, which means I think he's born in February. Mm-hmm. He's younger than most of the people in his same age group, in his same mm-hmm. school year. So he's 9-10 months old, younger than mm-hmm. people who graduated in the same year.
Right.
So there's that. But I don't, you know, I was shocked to see when the union guy told me about this, the things that bother him about service time manipulation in Japan. He said, like, I'm always talking to teams, telling them don't do this. And the thing he was talking about was, you know, what the Hawks used to, in fact, one guy who popped up when I was looking through my records was Rick Vandenhoek. But, you know, it's like he was forever one of those Hawks. Every, you know, when they had the 9-man rotation, you know, they had 3 starters and then the other 3 guys, you know, the other 6 guys were shuttled back and forth to the minor leagues every 10th day.
Yeah, I remember those days.
they started doing that with Tadashi Setsu because he couldn't handle the, you know, he wasn't bouncing back in time to make another start in the same week. So then they, you know, Kenny Chinakata went into that group and Vandenhoek went into that group and they had a whole gang. Mm-hmm. So that's a kind of common pattern as you see older pitchers doing that a lot. But when I saw this one young guy, I went, whoa, there it is. Right? There's our guy. And almost like the Indian guy, as soon as I saw this, I'm going, oh, this must be the guy. Because when he said, I'll be honest, he said, I have to talk to one team about this.
One team.
So that was interesting. So actually, I'd written most of that blog post in January when I talked to the union guy. And then I went looking for that. You know, I went looking when I listened to the Tony Barnett interview, I went looking for examples of the thing that Mr. Kato from the Players Association was talking about. And so I found that one staring me in the face.
Oh, well, I'm glad that sparked a...
I thought it was interesting. And I think your comments about the depth are really important. I mean, the Swallows are... But to say, it's hard to say the frontline players on the Swallows were all that polished. I mean, they've got a couple of good players and they had they had kind of more holes than filled in places.
I didn't say they were quite polished. I said the replacements are not as polished.
So, okay. So this granite over here that's not shiny, that's our polished rock.
Well, it's all relative. It's all relative indeed.
They were indeed.
But the team, like even last year, had a decent start and was up among the top, you know,
and I forgot
top contenders for a while early on in the season. So it's not like they started out poorly and remained that way.
I forgot Tony's comments about the bullpen, which was one thing that I really noticed last year was how good some of the young arms are. So that and I'm 100% on that. It's going to be fun. That part of it's going to be fun.
All right. Well, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about the trades that went down recently. Now, one of them was Toshitake Yoko, infielder who went from the Fighters to the Eagles. And there was also the right-handed pitcher Takahide Ikeda, who goes from the Eagles to the Fighters. And that was one. And then the big move that caused a lot of eyebrows to bounce up toward receding hairlines was...
that was Sunio Horiuchi's hairline. he had another spaz.
Oh, did he? Well, that was Kazuto Taguchi, 26-year-old lefty, who goes from the Giants to the Swallows for infielder Taishi Hirooka, who turns 24 next month. Now, you know, I looked at that trade and immediately I thought, oh, that's such a good trade for the Swallows. They picked up a guy who can maybe stay in their rotation the entire season. So that's really good. And Hirooka, a guy I've liked his swing. I've liked his power, the minimal, you know, I think he has played parts of four seasons now on the top team with the Swallows, but just shown flashes here and there. And he has some home run. I mean, he's got 21 career home runs in 473 at bats. So, I mean, yeah, he does have some pop. Taguchi's 26. Hirooka turns 24 next month. But then it hit me when I was watching the Giants the other night. They had a game at home. It did not hurt. It was a Masanori Ishikawa fastball, so it didn't hurt.
Ouch. That hurt.
I was watching Sakamoto move across the field, and I said, you know, the age is really starting to show now. Sometimes, I mean, he's taking it easy. He used to run off the field after whether making an out or the last out, or he was on base when the last out was made. And he used to dart around and look really spry, and he doesn't look that way anymore. I'm not saying he's done, but he just looks different. And it hit me that the Giants are maybe going to try to give him some more days off. And they want somebody out there. You know, you watch Hirooka, the one thing that stands out, his arm from, you know, deep in shortstop. He really has a really nice arm. And because he has that pop, I think they're going to try to spell Sakamoto a little bit more this season. I think that's the reason they got him. And I think maybe we just haven't seen anybody in the system already, in the Giants system, that who can maybe step in and play, you know, 20 games or so at short for them. And I think that's why they got Hirooka, and I expect to see a little bit more of him. And then, you know, Taguchi really is could be a valuable piece. He's 36 and 37 career, but he pitched out of the bullpen recently, past two seasons, I think, and, you know, 16 holds and two saves. So he can do that, or he can start, but I imagine he's going to start and be in that rotation. So I think it's a good move for both teams.
Yeah, it was. It interested me. I don't have a real strong image of him playing in the field. I'm basically looking at
Hirooka.
So I'm looking at, I do Taguchi. Taguchi he's basically the slowest. He used to have basically the slowest fastball of any starting pitcher in Japan.
Oh, so I shouldn't pick on Ishikawa, huh?
No.
No, okay.
No,
I'll stop.
We're going to start calling him Gonzalez.
Speedy?
As in speedy. Sneaky fast.
Old reference there. Jeez, we're going to have Underdog running across and Mighty Mouse running across the TV screen.
You darn better pretty soon. So anyway, now he was really slow. His velocity has ticked up in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, remarkably so. And he was, I think his fastball was averaging 137. I think it's averaging 142, and he throws it a lot. So it's not like it's a small sample size of what he does. But if speed is not his thing. But, you know, Horiuchi was basically going, here's a guy who won 10 wins for us, you know, 6 years ago. How come we're getting rid of him for this guy nobody heard of? Well,
because it was 6 years ago.
Exactly. They basically had no use for him the last 3 years. So, I mean, if people can remember, last year's Japan series was Sugano. I mean, the Giants basically ran out of starting pitchers after game two.
Hmm.
because, I mean, they had guys who could start, but they didn't really want it. They didn't trust any of them or whatever. Yeah. I mean, it was a very weird series. Anyway, I don't want to dig up that thing. But,
and yeah, it was a 13. He had 13 wins. Taguchi did in 2017 and 10 in 2016.
Mm-hmm. So he was effective. He was very reliable. And then he just he's basically has two useful pitches, the fastball and the slider. And he started throwing a splitter a bit, and his slider, I think, is getting back to where it's better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what that makeup is, but he's also he also gives the Swallows 3 of the 10 shortest pitchers in NPB.
Yeah, I did see something about that. Was that again on your blog post?
Yeah. So giving new meaning to the word short starter.
Yep.
So anyway, it's an interesting trade. And the other thing I would mention that I mentioned somewhere else is that it mirrors and somebody, and I would give credit to one of the papers. Maybe it was the Daily Sports that brought this up. And it was reminiscent of the trade last summer of Hirokazu Sawamura.
Mm-hmm.
For Kosciuszko, and that it was basically
from the Giants to the Marines, yeah.
Right. I mean, basically, they took a veteran pitcher with a higher salary for a guy who's basic for an infielder whose basic skill is hitting home runs,
mm-hmm.
but doesn't hit for average or really do anything else offensively. So, you know, he strikes out a lot, basically. So, I mean, it's not the Sawamura salary dump. I mean, they took a guy whose salary was $1.5 million a year and traded him for a guy whose salary was $50,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but it was, I think Taguchi's salary is about four times what Hiroka's was. And he's also older, a couple of years older. So.
Right.
But it was that kind of thing. The Giants are collecting power hitters. And the interesting thing about that, I'll mention, and because I didn't think that I looked at Konski and I said, this is a guy who can't play. I mean, okay, he can hit home runs, but if he didn't hit home runs, he'd be a 100 hit, you know, he'd be a 150 average hitter with nothing.
Okay.
When he joined the Giants, and it was a limited number of at-bats. And we often see guys who get traded do really well right after mm-hmm. they've been traded.
Sure.
But he looked that like...
impressed.
Yeah, well, he looked really good. I mean, his numbers with the Giants in the minor leagues were exceptionally good. So that means either A, we saw some of that effect, which is possible, or also the Giants, when they might have said, oh, here's a guy we know basically what he can do, and he's not doing it. And maybe they traded for him and said, okay, this is what you need to do, and he started doing it. There's always that.
There could be that.
It could be that. I mean, that's such an untypical way of doing things for the Giants. But if that is the case, that would be a really scary thing for the rest of the Central League, that the Giants actually started to get smart. Because match the money with the brains and they would be really hard to beat.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. All right, well, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about smart decisions and opening day starters. How about that?
Okay.
Most of the Pacific League has completed the opening day starter roster, mm-hmm. if we could put it that way. Oryx is going to start Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
Mm-hmm.
Nippon Ham is going to start Naoyuki Iwasawa. Seibu is going to start Kona Takahashi. SoftBank is going to start Shuta Ishikawa. And Hideaki Wakui gets the nod for Rakuten. Now, if he stays healthy and gets the ball that day, I read somewhere and I tried to find it on other places and I couldn't. So just one site said it would make him just the second player in NPB history to have opening day starts with three teams.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said there's a team that decided today. So all the Pacific League teams have picked their.
Yeah, I forgot about the first guy. It was so long ago. I think they announced Kona Takahashi as the starting pitcher last September.
That's when he had his really hot streak. In fact, Zach Neal was telling us about that on the show, that he, you know, right now it's Kona. He's the man. So maybe you're right.
Could have been. I mean, that was that whole time because he wears number 13. And I remember one of my favorite lines was, was it the manager? It was somebody on the team said, go out and, I think maybe it was Fumiya Nishiguchi, the pitching coach. He said to him before his ninth inning of his no-hit bid, he said, go out and pitch the way I used to pitch through eight innings.
No.
Or actually, in Nishiguchi's case, it was more like go out and pitch the way I did until I got to the last batter, considering he lost one no-hitter. Might have been a perfect game. He lost a perfect game to the last hitter.
Yeah, I was at.
He hit a home run off him at Cebu.
Yep, I was at that game.
Oh yeah, that was my buddy.
It was against the Giants.
Yep, yeah. It was indeed. And then he lost his other no-hitter in the 10th inning.
Yep. Yeah, I remember that one. I don't think I was at that game, but I was watching for sure.
Yeah, that was against Rakuten. That was Kazuhiro Ichiba also pitched a no-hitter through nine. Yasuhiro Ichiba. Excuse me. Yasuhiro Ichiba pitched a no-hitter, I think, through nine. And it might have been the 11th inning that Nishiguchi lost his.
Yeah, unfortunately, he couldn't score from that night. So even though he got through nine innings, he won the game.
I think he won the game, but he ended up not getting the no-hitter. So
So you say Lotte decided who's going to start for them?
Kota Futaki.
Kota Futaki. All right. So that means the Pacific League roster is all set, and then in the Central League we've got the Giants are going to start Tomoyuki Sugano. No surprise there. Yasuhiro Ogawa is going to go for the Swallows. Daichi Osada for the Carp. I think DeNA and Hanshin, they have not yet announced, although I heard rumblings of Yuki Nishi for the Tigers. I don't know if you heard that.
Well, he was their opening day starter last year, so that's always, generally you go with the big guy, unless your name is Tsuyoshi Yoda.
Yeah, in which case, Koji Fukutani.
That's right.
He's going to get the opening day nod for the Dragons. And I heard that tonight when I was watching their game on TV against the Eagles. And they won. They scored two runs off of Malkun and came back to win that game. So that was exciting for them, I guess, in the preseason. But Koji Fukutani, yeah.
Yeah.
Our buddy Coaster Freak really likes hearing that, I'm sure.
Hashtag high heat.
No comment from Jim. You got.
I don't know what the joke was, to be honest, but that's...
he regularly just chides on Futani on Twitter. Yeah. Oh yeah, he's relentless. So I guess the biggest, there are a lot of surprises among those guys, but I guess the biggest has to be Wakui for me, because I just assumed it was going to be Malkun, and if not, it was going to be the guy who says he's not the ace, but has...
who's been saying that since 2014, and people are starting to believe him.
Yeah, one of the sites I was on printed all the opening day starters for the Rakuten Eagles in franchise history since, it's only been since 2005. Mm-hmm. And our buddy Norimoto, Takahiro Norimoto, started. He got his first opening day nod in 2013, and that was because of the WBC.
Correct.
And Malkun was not available, quote, or hint, or whatever.
Well, they arrived back in Japan like 5 days before opening day, yeah.
Yeah, and so 2013 was the first of four straight years that he started on opening day. Then skipping a year, he got the nod in 2018, and then skipping another year in 2020. So I was assuming it was going to be one of those two. So Wakui, who tied for the league lead in wins last season, is going to get the nod. So pretty impressive. That, I guess, that's pretty surprising. That was up until, you know, Kutani got the knock for the Dragon. So I guess they're equally surprising. But Kutani was really useful as a starter last year. I just don't know if that's going to carry over this year or not. So I guess we'll get to see right away.
No idea. I mean, I guess my question, too, is that Yasuhiro Ogawa is going to make his... Now, I was... You know what just shocked me about Yasuhiro Ogawa is that this will be his fifth opening day start. And, you know, and the reason that surprises me is I thought that the Swallows were required by their lease at Jingu Stadium to start Masanori Ishikawa. You know, there was some reason that he was out. They wheel him out every year, but...
Hashtag high heat.
Did you say wheel? No, I haven't been that bad. Come on, man.
No, he's good. I mean, this guy's really fit. I mean, have you ever been... I don't remember who I was talking to at the Swallows Clubhouse, and Ishikawa came out, and he's buff. I mean, he was wearing his weight training gloves, and he looked like he could pump some serious iron. He's just a small guy, but
right,
he's really a physical specimen. So even though he's not as old as I am, but damn, he's in good shape.
Well, he did not get the nod. It's going
did
to
did not get the nod. So there will be some. I'm sure there will be some Swallows fans who will be disappointed. But he does. He has. I'm not going to say he's one of those guys who always pitches well on opening day. He's no Hideaki Wakui, but he has had a couple of memorable big opening day starts. So I remember those rather than the bad ones.
Well. Yeah, Ogawa, I wasn't surprised to hear that. I think a couple of times, in some instances, he just wasn't healthy enough to start at the start of the season. And that's why they went to Ishikawa.
And they figured, hey, he struck out 10 guys in a game last year. He must be getting somewhere.
He must be getting somewhere, and he threw a no-hitter. So,
well, that was the game.
Okay, well, yeah, all right.
That was the first time in his career he struck out 10 batters.
Okay.
He was, I think, the first pitcher in history who threw a no-hitter who had never struck out 10 batters in a game.
Wow. All right. Well, making a seamless transition, I've been watching some of these preseason games. I don't know. It's hard to differentiate. You know, as you know, I was away. So I came back and I'm like, okay, what are the practice games and what are the actual preseason practice games? I can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
So, I've just been lumping them all together. But I think Teruaki Sato Hanshin looks like he's going to win a roster spot for sure coming out of spring, and perhaps a starting job if they can figure out where to play him. And he cracked a solo home run against SoftBank on Friday, and he's looking good. But I don't buy in heavily to the spring games because there's just so much going on out there. But he does seem to be showing that he has some potential so far, and that's good for the.
Well, he's got raw. I mean, what you can tell is that he can hit the ball really far.
Yeah,
you know, he's got raw power.
Yeah,
if he can make contact in games, then that's another story. But you know, he's got part of it. You don't have one, but you can't have game power unless you can actually hit the ball far.
Yeah, that's true. And he scuffed a ball today that went out to, the warning track in center field. Again, it's, SoftBank and the fences have been the The home run terrace makes a difference. Yeah, has made a difference for SoftBank, but still, I didn't think he got much of this pitch, and it carried pretty well. So he looks like he's going to be he's got potential to be very good.
He's modeling his swing after Yuki and Nagita's, and he'll hit all those balls that go out, and he's going like, oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. And then, as I said, we did mention Masahiro Tanaka. He's been normal looking. He hasn't been shut down so far.
Well, the funny thing was,
he's working his way back, and he looked good.
Yeah, the funny thing was, and I wrote about this a bit last week, is in his, well, first of all, today we had his preseason exhibition debut. Never mind that he thrown in two practice games, because those are practice. And so he had his spring debut, and then he had his real spring debut. And I guess when he pitches on March 27th, it'll be his real spring debut. So the second game.
Oh, there's too many springs here.
Yeah, sorry. I
I mean, that's what I was saying. I couldn't, you know, obviously I spent almost 2 weeks in the States. I couldn't really keep up with what was real and what was fake real.
Well, there's essentially no difference except in a practice game, you can have things like Kazuki Yabuta did for the Carp the other day, about a week ago. They were playing a practice game, I think against the Dragons, and manager Shinji Sasaoka got so fed up with him, he pulled him with two outs in the first inning, and then he put him back in the second inning. You can do that in a practice game.
Okay.
Make up the rules and bring in players, and you can ask the rules. You can. You can say, you can ask the umpire if they can have four outs in the inning because I want the guys to practice batting. I want this guy to practice hitting in this situation. You know, things like that. It happens from, you don't see it very often, but it'll happen once a year. A team will, you know, bend the rules for it, you know, so they can get something, you know, have a teaching point or something. Well, with Yabuta's teaching point, it was like, if you do this again, we're never going to see you on the first team this year. So they threw him back out there, and he ended up, although he only got 2/3 of an inning in the first inning, I think he went 2 1/3. So,
well, speaking of never going to see, I still haven't heard much about Noki Sasaki of Lotte. So give the people what they want.
Yeah, he's supposedly he's ostensibly going to pitch in relief in a preseason game this week.
Okay, let's make this happen.
But I'll believe it when I see it.
See it. Yeah, yeah. And also for Lotte, Kyota Fujiwara really has been particularly strong with the bat and the glove. I mean, he's really, since that COVID call-up late last season, he's really shown that he can handle the pitching on this level. And he's making enough plays in the outfield that I think he can win a spot. I would imagine Takashi Ogino is in center and Leonis Martin are fixtures in the outfield, but maybe some...
Well, there's less competition since Ikuhiro Kyoto, you know.
Your buddy.
got his walking papers. He's still indefinitely suspended. So, that's interesting. And the other one I'll bring up, and I haven't watched him enough, so I can't really make a judgment,
But you will anyway.
No. Ask somebody who might have been watching is, have you seen anything from Akira Naio?
I watched the game today. He faced Makun twice, so that was no competition. Although he hung in on a splitter with two strikes. I don't know if it was a 3-2 splitter or a 2-2 splitter. I don't remember the count, but it was at least one ball. And it was a pretty good pitch to try to get him to swing. It just didn't bounce, and he hung in and grounded out, hit it pretty hard. The other time he struck out. But yeah, he was really no match. But he's learning. If they got him in left field, and if he can hit it all, I think athletically he'll be useful in left field until Mike Gerber arrives, whenever that is. And the report today during the game was that Gerber's still not in Japan. So as a person who is now sitting through quarantine isolation all by myself since I arrived back in Japan on March 1st, I know it's going to be a tough thing. My family's been away, so I've been, Home Alone is not just a movie, baby, not in the COVID era, and it's not half as fun. So he's going to have to go through that. I don't know when these players are going to get on the field. Like I said, I think I said early on, I thought maybe early April is sometime when they can get in, but who knows? If they don't get here soon, you know, that quarantine clock doesn't start. So they got to get him in the country. But anyway.
And speaking of which, I did talk to Kenny Uemoto. I talked to Kenny Uemoto, the international director, I believe his title is, for the Nippon Ham Fighters. And he said that there were, I did write a blog about this, but for those of you who don't read the blog, he said that basically the fighters, because the fighters players don't transit through Sapporo on their way to spring training.
Mm-hmm.
They always arrange for them to pick up their all their paperwork when they, I forget how it is, but it's basically now in the COVID, they'd have to go to Sapporo, and they're not set up to do it that way.
The team isn't set up to have the players go through
Sapporo. I didn't quite understand it, but basically they always plan it so that the players get their paperwork done in Okinawa, but because they don't live in Okinawa, apparently that's a problem during the COVID era.
Yeah.
But the other teams, that would make sense because the Lions players typically don't go to Saitama Prefecture before they head to Okinawa. And I think the Bay Stars guys also don't go through Yokohama, but the Marines and Giants and Swallows and Buffaloes and Tigers and Dragons guys would probably all go through those local international airports. So they may have an advantage in that respect, and that places like Sendai and Sapporo.
Yeah, they might have for spring training, but now the teams are on the road. Yeah, it's throwing everything off.
And now guys aren't allowed into the country, it was essentially a procedural thing. That's the way they've always done it, and the way they always did it did not. Made it virtually impossible for them to process their guys' visas.
What a mess! This COVID, it's really. Let's get rid of it, people. Let's stamp it out.
Do your best. Do your best.
All right, let's go to fielding questions.
Hashtag high heat.
So hey, how do you like the new drop? By the way,
I do. I feel like I should have some sort of echo staccato kind of thing going on.
Well, yeah.
Thanks, Gabe, for that. And who has the echo and the vibrato in his voice, even without any sort of technical means. But
yeah. All right. Our question this week actually didn't start out as a question, but it was complex. So I decided if I was going to answer it, I was going to answer it with context and not just yes or no. And this came via Twitter from Coaster Freak, our buddy. And he asks, is this a make or break year for the Dragons left-handed pitcher Shinosuke Ogasawara? And like I said, this requires context. If you just want to say yes, then I guess it's okay. But I think it's a make or break year for any player at any level, at any time, because you have to prove you can do it just because you've done it before, blah, 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 blah.
I mean, basically, you got to go out and prove that
you can still do it, even if you have.
If you really stink and you haven't done anything before, then that's kind of a break year.
Right. as opposed to breakout. So I always said that his name, Shinosuke Ogasawara, was Hall of Fame level, but his game has not matched that so far. So to answer the question, I guess I'd have to ask you a question. And why would it just kind of seems random that a guy who's in his sixth year, why would the sixth year be the deadline for a guy to have a make or break season?
I know,
especially a guy who didn't come into the team with a lot of fanfare like some other pitchers. I won't pick on anybody in particular, but there's other pitchers who come in with a name and some fanfare who we haven't seen on the first level at all.
Well, he was good when he came up, and then two things happened. Well, he had arthroscopic surgery on his left elbow.
Okay, well,
so he had a cleaning, and then he had to have more detached bodies removed from the elbow again 2 years later. I think that was 2017 and 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So he may have the cleanest elbow in Japan. That thing's been hoovered. But he was really bad last year. He was really ineffective. I think he had a 7-point-something ERA on the first team, and he had a 6-point-something ERA on the farm team. He was pretty awful. But so I think in that respect, it is a good question, because he was really awful. And I think if he shows it, so it could be a break year. It could be a break year for him to where they say, let's sign you to a developmental contract. because we're not going to pay you 10 million yen next year. So we're just going to maybe release you and try to re-sign you as a developmental player. I think that could happen if he doesn't get back to something approaching usefulness. But I think everything's going to depend on, you know, how well he returns from that second surgery, because so far he hasn't really come back yet.
Yeah, and I hadn't finished, but that personal time frame that you have there, Costa Freak, I didn't get that. I don't think it's the team's time frame, and that's where the context comes in. I don't know what the expectations were when he was chosen. I just remember that everyone was so impressed that this young high school guy had such, you know, powerful and thick thighs, and he had huge legs, and he could throw hard, and he could throw his off speed pitches and get him over the plate. But he showed some signs, you know, he really looked like he was going to be a useful pitcher, but they weren't scoring runs at the time that he was throwing fairly decent games, probably that second season, in terms of his career and his ERA and all that stuff. But I was expecting him to be in the rotation. I think when we did the prediction show last year, I said he was going to be in the rotation, and he just didn't even make the team out of camp. So I don't think it's about our expectations as observers. I think it's about the team. You know, going by your standards, Costa Freak, Koji Fukutani, who was his first year was 2013. He was supposed to be the closer. And he didn't do well, but he kicked around in the organization long enough to go 8-2 last year with a 2.64 ERA. And he's going to be the opening day starter. So now I'm not saying he's going to be a good opening day starter or a useful starter this year, but this guy's just, we have to remember that they develop differently. They're different guys. They're different styles of pitching, and they have to learn how to compete and adjust on this level to come back every week and be useful as a starter, or come back every, you know, 3 or 4 days a week to be useful as a reliever, or if they're a position player, to be able to adjust enough to be consistent. Athleticism and all that stuff only gets you so far. You've got to be able to think the game and understand what the other player's strengths are and what they're trying to do to you as well. So long story short, I just didn't want to say yes or no, because I wanted to add some context, which is that, you know, it depends on what the teams think. It really doesn't depend on what we think. And I haven't talked to anybody. Obviously, we didn't talk to many people last year at all, but I will try to talk to somebody if we have the opportunity to go to games this year and talk to some of the pitching coaches, or at least the manager, and find out what they think. Because, you know, I really thought that this guy was going to be a really good, productive or efficient pitcher for them for a while. And he has not done that, but I see potential there, but we've got to start seeing some results on the field. And again, they didn't score a lot of runs for him early on when he was, when he did have some success, but that was a bad offense at that time. So I don't think you can always blame the win run or the win loss record on him. And I don't think they played all that great defense either, but I was expecting a little bit better from him. Yeah, you're right. He was 4-1 last year with a 7.11 ERA on the first team, and just didn't look good in his work that he did get on the first team after not making the roster out of camp. So maybe there's just some more floating bodies or detached bodies out there that they have to collect and then get him all cleaned up again. I don't know.
Well, if there are more detached bodies, I'm sure the Yakult Swallows might sign some of them.
No, you're not. They've got talent. They brought in some talent. We talked to Tony.
Well,
about
I mean,
it.
They were freaking. I'm just thinking who they got. Kodai Miyadai, former Todai pitcher. They signed him, and they signed a lot of. Guys who were floating around looking at the Hello Work this winter.
Hashtag high.
Okay. All right. I can see what kind of mood you're in now. Now, listen, guys, again, please do go on to iTunes and write and rate and review our podcast. We would appreciate that.
And I apologize to all our longtime listeners for saying this is our 10th season. on the newsletter on Sunday, our technical advisor and tech guru Michael Westbay reprimanded me for my inability to understand the space-time continuum.
Or read the volume and show number in the podcast player that you have. That
I just I just play them. I just play them.
I just put gas in the car and go.
Damn, that's what I used to do.
Okay, I was going to get to, I guess we're going to have our prediction shows. I just really, because of this family emergency situation, I haven't had time to plan. Claudio got in touch with me, so maybe he will be on the show. We have invited Jason Koskrey, but I just do not have time to plan out the big show. So we'll have to do big shows next year, and we'll see who we can get on the show for next week. But we'll be going weekly. So from now on until the end of the season. So we'll do a prediction show next week and follow that up with the second league. Jim and I haven't spoken about it at all, so I can't tell you what league we're going to do next week, but we will figure it out as we go along here in this week. Send us any questions you might have. Hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Questions by email, including MP3 questions, people. To yakyujohn@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.